Free Talk Live. Dial in toll free. Join us on the radio waves and bring up anything that you want to discuss with you tonight in the studio. It's Ian,
Jay,
and Daryl.
We've got Skype. You can Skype into the show at Skype username lrn.fm. We've got toll free lines. Toll free numbers 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. And, of course, you can bring up anything that you want. Coming up, more just shocking news out of Venezuela. We'll get into that here in moments. Or maybe it shouldn't be shocking.
Shouldn't be shocking, considering that several months ago we talked about how Venezuela can't afford to buy money.
Right, and we'll get into what now they cannot afford to do in just a few moments.
Also, now they can't afford to earn money.
We'll get into that. Also coming up, Colexit. There's some news about that, but also Britain with their Brexit.
Yes.
There's an update on that, and it sounds like it might be good news. So we're gonna do a little international coverage here, and then we'll also talk about Jay Noon and his property tax situation. Longtime listeners will remember that. Of course, we'll recap what has gone on in a very long history over many years on a couple different properties. So we'll get an update there as well. Toll-free number again if you want to join us, 855-450-FREE. We'll start down in Venezuela, where things just continue to get worse and fall apart under the socialist administration of Nicolas Maduro, the man who followed up Hugo Chavez.
Yes.
He was his right-hand man during the time he was in office.
Maduro likes to blame things on the United States, and I don't know how he can twist this to blame America.
Okay.
The story comes from foreignpolicy.com. A fleet of rundown Venezuelan oil tankers carrying some 4 million barrels of oil and other fuels is wallowing in the Caribbean, not because of bad weather or mechanical problems, but because Venezuela's state-owned oil company, Petróleos de Venezuela S.A., abbreviated throughout the rest as PVSA,
okay,
does not have the cash to get the tankers to their final destination. Beyond the obvious environmental risk, it's doubly bad news for Venezuela, a country in dire economic straits and full-fledged crisis with a political impasse,
jeez,
looting, dangerous food and health supply shortages, and a massive protest. Venezuela is massively reliant on oil exports to bankroll government services, but the cash-strapped country can't even find the money to service the vessels to carry the exports.
Unbelievable.
And Venezuela needs the exports to get the cash to service the vessels. It's a vicious circle.
A fine example of a parasite that's just gotten too big for its
right.
house. That's all it is.
They are screwed.
Before ships venture into international waters, international maritime law requires safety inspections, hull cleanings, and other services. And PDVSA, already mired in debt, can't foot those bills, leaving crude-stained tankers in the lurch.
Oh, man.
Further exacerbating the problem is intermittent leaks at Venezuela's poorly maintained oil export terminals. The leaks stained incoming and outgoing tankers, creating a backlog of cleaning. Some tankers wait as long as 2 months for cleaning before being seaworthy, according to one inspector who told Reuters, who first broke the story. Venezuela, once Latin America's most powerful petrostate, is on the brink of collapse after decades of economic mismanagement and boiling tensions between Nicolas Maduro and opposition parties. Low global oil prices have not helped. The global oil cartel OPEC agreed to slash global production last year, but the small uptick in oil prices likely will not provide enough reprieve for PDVSA to weather its debt storm.
I mean, let's put this in another words. These people, the government of Venezuela, have a resource that is basically money. I mean, they have oil.
And they can extract it really easy. They don't have to frack or anything, and they've been doing it for years, and they've had infrastructure for a long time. And you got American oil companies that are putting millions and millions of dollars into fracking and equipment, and they and they're, you know, they're still making some money at the 50 some odd dollar, and they're not raking in huge like they were a few years ago. But when I was out in Colorado, them guys are, you know, they're putting on and they're still drilling wells. And in Venezuela, it's like super easy. And also they're farming. They can like, they could dominate farming and agriculture big time because they got such a
great
good
weather.
Soil. They got good. They got a lot of good stuff going for them. So this is like the easiest place in the world almost to like literally support and export and make money.
But
it's just falling apart.
They can't.
Because socialism.
Because socialism.
Because
and this is probably the best part of the story to show just how absolutely horrible things are in Venezuela. They project oil production will linger near a 23-year low in the year 2017. So they've got this thing that's basically liquid money.
Yes.
What they call it in the opening
black gold.
The opening of the Beverly Hillbillies, black gold.
That's right.
They can't get it out of the country because they can't afford to clean the ships in a timely manner. And they then can't afford to like power the ships, even though they've got liquid gold that gets turned into fuel. They can't. They can't do it.
It's bewildering.
And so their oil production is going to be at a 23-year low.
I mean, it really just goes to show how much of a failure governments are at doing anything that they're supposed to do. I mean, handling black gold, they can't even run that business. They are running that business into the ground and failing miserably, and that's the last export, the only real export that the country has. They could have other exports, as you're pointing out, Jay, but you know, socialism has failed, as it always does.
Just to show people, and it's not just socialism, it's government.
Right.
Because
that's true.
The U.S. federal government ran a whorehouse that wound up closing.
When was this?
Several years ago. They seized one in Nevada.
They did? The feds?
The feds seized a whorehouse and they could not make it profitable.
Right. That's a great point. I'm glad you pointed that out. It is the failure of the state as a concept because they're insulated from the marketplace. They're selling in the marketplace, but they don't have the same level of market signals that they have to respond to, especially in Venezuela, because they are a monopoly here. There's nobody else, presumably, that is allowed to do business to compete with these people. It's just unbelievable. I mean, what else did you want to share here? Was there more from the story?
No, that was the end of the story.
So I've got a solution. Sell the assets. Just like any other business that's failing, that you failed, you can't manage this money-generating business.
I see a flaw in your thinking here, because in order to sell the assets, they would have to, you know, put it up on some kind of sales platform, auction. You have to hire an auctioneer. They don't have the money to hire auctioneer to sell the stuff.
Yeah, commission. You pay them 5% or 2% or something like that.
The big problem with selling off the assets is I'm sure that there's a handful of people, there's a small majority of the Venezuelan population that are these so-called elitists. And I'm sure they're sitting pretty, doing fine, living in beautiful houses.
Eating well.
Because they're the ones who've been, you know, the parasites leeching on the system. And what has happened is this parasite in Venezuela has gotten so out of control. I mean, Venezuela, they have these vast resources. It's just insane. But correct me if I'm wrong, but I've been listening to this for years now. And what really first started this whole spiral of this downfall of their economy is when the government started nationalizing. Well, what they first started doing was price caps in the grocery stores. And then they basically started saying to the farmers, hey, you can't sell your crop for this much. If you need $3 a bushel for your corn, no, you can only sell it for $1 a bushel,
or whatever it was. For below cost in some cases.
If you're for below cost. And then with the inflation, you got the Venezuelan government start printing up money to support these.
Hold that thought. We're going to continue here in moments. 855-450-FREE. Your thoughts are welcome. Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live, Toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. You want to see how government works? Go ahead and put them in charge of a cash business that they can easily, you know, make money off of.
Who was the guy that said if you put the government in charge of the Sahara in 5 years, they'll be out of sand?
I don't know, but that seems appropriate here. Well, in the case of Venezuela, they're not out of oil. They just don't have enough money to buy the things they need to buy, the government that runs the oil company there, to buy the things they need to buy, like a ship cleaning, for instance, to be able to sell the oil that they have, because government fails at pretty much everything it tries. Sure, if they throw enough money at something, like here in the United States, they'll throw, you know, billions of dollars or millions of dollars.
But the printing press is still working here in the United States. It stopped working in Venezuela.
That's correct.
And it's going to happen here. It just has to, because everything comes to, you know, the bubble's going to pop.
Well, the U.S. government has a whole lot more wealth at their hands,
well,
so
they have
the ability to kind of string this out for a while.
And they also are the kneecap realignment men of the world, so every time somebody doesn't go along with the dollar strategy, you know, they get bombed.
So we're going to continue the discussion here. Also, some other interesting Venezuela-related headlines, including they are also running short on HIV medication. And there's also a proposal in the United States to put sanctions on Venezuela's officials. Now, I'm not sure if that will include the people of Venezuela. Story here, if you want to join us, 855-450-FREE.
Generally, whenever there's sanctions against a country, it winds up harming the people.
Generally, it does. 855-450-FREE. Skype username is lrn.fm. As we continue, we'll go to Patrick in Bullhead City, Arizona, listening to K-Talks. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, guys. Hey. I wanted to chime in before my wife gets home and yells at me.
Okay.
But
why is the wife going to yell at you?
Oh, because I'm not getting the honeydews done in a timely manner.
Ah,
okay.
At least you're prepared.
Yeah, I'm prepared. I'm a veteran at this. They should give us Purple Hearts.
So but go ahead. Anyway, what do you got to say?
I just say Venezuela years ago. I've been there.
Oh,
and
okay.
And the thing is, I mean, about 10, 15 years ago, it was beautiful. I mean, the economy was thriving, and there was it was just beautiful. I mean, the people were really friendly and everything. But I'll tell you, I wouldn't go there now. It's scary.
Yeah, it's a very deadly place to be, and you can't have a gun to defend yourself either, legally.
No, and if you're even if you're going through with a knife or anything like that, you're going to get yourself in trouble. It's just scary. But, you know, I'll tell you, it's an opportunity for Shark Tank to go on there. Maybe they should go down there.
Shark Tank, like the investments thing, the television show, you mean?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, if they could work out some differences and everything else, think about the gas prices. You know, gas prices, I mean, if they want to control the gas prices in America and actually put America to work, I mean, I don't know what the prices are out where you, but, I mean, when it got over $5 a gallon, it just caused a big problem in the U.S., but, you know...
That happened in Arizona? Gas was $5 a gallon? I know it hit up pretty high in California. I knew that, but...
Diesel was over $5 a gallon. That's when I started using, like, vegetable oil and stuff like that about 10 years ago.
So, wait, I'm not sure what you're proposing, Patrick. Can you clarify that?
I'm just saying that, you know, if the... People have to really use their head a little more on this. There's opportunity to be able to help out. Like you guys are saying, help out someplace in the world without technically getting into their business politically.
Well, you can't help the government become more efficient. There's no amount of advising or, you know, assisting or subsidizing or anything that's going to help these government guys. They just are not able to accomplish competition in the marketplace. They fail at managing everything that they try to manage. And when they're thin on operating cash, then they're going to grind to a halt, which is what has happened.
You got to look at government literally as a parasite to really put it in perspective. The parasite's always going to want to grow. It's always going to want to, you know, keep on, you know, laying eggs or whatever. It's just, and that's literally what's happened with the bureaucrat class. I mean, retiring bureaucrats in the United States are earning like 80% to 90% of their actual working income and are producing and doing nothing. And actually, they were literally producing and doing nothing while they were working, you know, making 100% of the income.
Yeah, it's sad because from what I understand that the average income down there is frightening to see somebody trying to actually live off of that.
Yeah, well, there are very few people are able to even be able to afford food at the moment. It's hard to feed a family three meals a day down in Venezuela. It is a dire situation, and it sounds like it's only going to get worse, especially as the country's number one export is now no longer exportable due to the failure of the government. Thank you, Patrick. I appreciate hearing from you tonight.
And Patrick's original suggestion of, you know, just find private investors, that would work if the industry was not nationalized.
Well, right, and that comes back to the conversation I don't think we ever really finished. The idea that I had suggested was put this up for auction. Sell the assets. Okay, you know, you guys nationalized everything there in Venezuela. You failed. So now go ahead and turn this industry back over to private companies and leave them alone. Don't just turn it over to a private company and then renationalize it again after they start it up and make it profitable again. These guys are failing, and unfortunately the people of Venezuela are starving along with them, and it's not I'm not saying the government guys are starving, they're eating well, but they're failing at their efforts, and the people are paying the price for it, and they're not going to change their ways, and I don't know how this is all going to come to an end. It's going to be a mess.
From what I understand, the oil industry in Venezuela has been nationalized for a very, very long time, but
right.
It was literally recently that the actual farms, the private individual farms, became nationalized, because when the government said to the farmers, hey, there's a price cap on your crop, and men with guns are going to show up unless you sell these things at a certain price. And what was actually happening before that, I believe, is that the government was printing money and subsidizing the grocery stores. So then the folks were going to the grocery stores, buying this underpriced stuff, hauling it across national borders and selling it to make a profit, because they could buy, you know, toilet paper, food, you know, cheaper than you could even produce it for. So they were just smuggling out and selling it. And then when it came time to put the pressure on the farmers, the farmers literally walked away from their farms, because it was either work as slaves for nothing,
right,
or men with guns are coming force you to, you know, do this. So they just walked away. I have a friend in New York, guy I bought hay from for years, and I talked to him about this about 6 months ago, and he literally was in about 10 years going to invest in a farm in Venezuela, and he saw this happening, and he
didn't invest.
He went to Brazil.
Toll-free number tonight, 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. You can share your thoughts. Looks like it was 1976 when they nationalized their oil industry, so 41 years ago. 855-450-FREE. Take control of the airwaves. Your thoughts welcome. This is Free Talk Live. We just got our new Rye Guys t-shirts. I chose the Power Corrupts shirt and the I'm Already Against the Next War shirt. These quality shirts look good and feel good, and they feature clever, thought-provoking designs to promote freedom, peace, and healthy skepticism of modern mythologies. The Rye Guys donate a portion of proceeds to antiwar.com and the Future of Freedom Foundation. Enter coupon code FTL at checkout to get 15% off your order. That's ryguys.com, WRYguys.com, ryguys.com. It's a Rye wit for today's shit. It's Free Talk Live, and with you in the studio tonight, it's Ian,
Jay,
and Daryl.
Toll-free number tonight, 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. Yeah, you thought things were bad in Venezuela. Well, they are getting worse. Now they can't even sell the oil that was their only real export because of the government destroying all their other exports by nationalizing industries and so on. Toll-free number 855-450-FREE if you want to join us here. MyPillow.com. If you aren't in Venezuela, you might be able to afford a MyPillow because, well, Venezuelans can barely even afford to eat at the moment. And MyPillow is not an expensive pillow. You can get it even at half off by using code FTL. Plus, you're probably going to think this is the best pillow you've ever owned. If you don't think so, then send it back to them, and they'll send you your money back. You've got a 60-day window once you get the pillow, 60 days to decide whether you want to keep it or not, and you can get your money back if you want. MyPillow.com, code FTL, gets you one at half price, two for the price of one. It's a great pillow designed to fit to the shape of your body and hold your neck in the proper position. It's also washable. Put it in your washer and dryer if you like. That's MyPillow.com, code FTL, like Free Talk Live. It's also warranted for 10 years. MyPillow.com, code FTL. So we were talking about this disturbing story out of Venezuela, that things are so bad economically in Venezuela thanks to the failure of the Venezuelan state, thanks to government, thanks to socialism. And
Maduro. I wonder if they say gracias Maduro down in Venezuela the same way people in the U.S. would say thanks Obama.
I don't know. I imagine there's a lot of people that don't like Mr. Maduro at the moment. He's been chased out of town. There was one island that they chased him out of on foot.
and that's pots and pans. The one where he decided, oh, these people are chasing my presidential vehicle. Let me get out and walk amongst my people.
He's going to calm them down. That didn't work. So we've continued to follow the Venezuelan situation, and there's other related news that I want to share, including the latest on trying to mine Bitcoin in Venezuela. There have been some arrests recently. They are cracking down on Bitcoin mining in Venezuela because they don't want anyone to be productive in Venezuela or have a chance to make any money.
First the farmers, now the Bitcoin miners.
Yep, we're going to your calls and thoughts first, though. It's Charlie listening in Arizona to K-Talks. Hello, Charlie.
Hi, guys.
Hey.
With all due respect to Patrick, I don't think he made himself clear. The gas prices in Arizona are routinely $2 less than California.
Okay.
But we're right across the river. I mean, that's really that close. And I think it proves your point, because here in Arizona, we don't have oil fields. We don't have, many refineries like they do in California. So the only answer is the government interference and regulation in California that causes the price to be so much more. I mean, yep. You know, it's the third more just by crossing the bridge, which is crazy.
Are there any gas stations across the bridge in California?
Oh, yeah. There's Needles, California, where K-Talks is.
Okay.
Is in California, and it's depending on which highway you take.
It's amazing they would even bother opening up a gas station if all you got to do is
gas station on one side of the river, and as soon as you cross the other to the other side, the price is $2
less. That's amazing. That's a huge
savings. And like
savings.
I said, we don't have the oil fields like they do in California. We don't have the refineries like they do in California.
But you don't have the regulations like they do. Hey, good call, Charlie. Great point tonight. I appreciate hearing from you. The toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. There's some benefits to living near one of those border areas from state to state. You can always take advantage of whichever laws are which way on each side.
True, and I do know some people that live in southern Montana that will drive to Wyoming to take advantage of, I forget what the thing is in Wyoming, no sales tax or something.
Maybe. I know that there's, and I always get them mixed up, I know that Washington State and Oregon, one of them doesn't have a sales tax and the other one doesn't have an income tax.
Yeah.
So if you live in the one that has no income tax, you can then travel across the border to the one that has no sales tax to do your shopping.
Now, we have a fair amount of listeners in Arizona. We know this because we get calls from people.
We've got K-Talks, which is airing us live, so yes.
Right. And I just happened to have seen a story that apparently there's some kind of passenger identification bill that's going through the legislature there in Arizona.
No, meaning the cops can demand ID from passengers?
To where if you are the passenger in a vehicle and you do not have sufficient identification,
that's bad.
You could go to jail for 4 months.
Wow, that's bad.
Oh boy, I'd have fun with that one.
Yes.
I love it when they want to know who I am in a car. And just,
aren't you going down there now?
No, I got some other stuff going on.
Oh, that's right. You changed your plans.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, if the bill passes, a passenger would be required to have evidence of identity.
Wow, that's
failure
crazy.
To do so would be a Class 2 misdemeanor, which allows for up to 4 months incarceration.
Is that constitutional?
Yes, it probably is, because the word passenger, I'm sure, is a commercial term.
News media report on what the bill says. I'm not actually looking at the text of the legislation.
But I'm sure to use the language passenger, because passenger is a commercial term. If you have your friend riding in a car with you, then your friend's riding in a car with you. But if your friend is a passenger, then that would, you know, denote that maybe you're hiring
hired.
For a fare. Yeah. You're for hire. It's all these commercial terms that, like,
good luck convincing a cop of that, though. I mean, they're going to arrest you anyway.
Oh, maybe. The people just got to get better at suing them. But they got Mark Stevens down there to help them out with that. So.
That's true. I wish we could get him up here. Fun. Toll-free number tonight, 855-450-FREE. Let's talk to Bailey. She's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Bailey, you're listening online. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up, you guys?
Hey,
how you guys doing?
We're doing a radio show. Go ahead with your thoughts.
So I just wanted to talk again about dolphin slaughtering, and I know I talked to you guys yesterday.
Who were the dolphins slaughtering?
Yes, I hope you remember that.
I wasn't on the air last night.
I was here, though.
Who or what are the dolphins slaughtering?
He's making a joke.
Dolphin slaughtering that is going on is, I'm just trying to make sure that, you know, dolphins are not getting slaughtered around the U.S. or, you know, in the, you know, country or, you know, around the world. And, you know, it just makes me really nervous because, you know, our sea life is already going, you know, almost gone, and you want to make sure that that's not there.
Is there any benefit to slaughtering a dolphin? I mean, are people looking to harvest them for, like, meat or oil or fat?
You can actually get a lot of money off of it, from what I know.
Also, there's a market for them.
There's a town in Japan, and I don't remember it offhand, starts with a letter T. We looked this up last night, where there are 1,000...
Taji,
that was it, yeah, where there was a movie made called The Cove, which is apparently very disturbing, according to one of our callers last night, about the slaughtering of the dolphins down there. And they are either shipping the dolphins unslaughtered to various different places, or they are slaughtering them for whatever products can be made from them. And it's, I would say, a relatively unpopular thing to do, clearly there is some small level of market out there. Bailey, I don't think calling talk radio is going to really have an effect on whether or not somebody is Oh, hey, that's F the Police. That's pretty cool. I think she was trolling. That's what she was trying to get to last night. So she had this call about the dolphin slaughtering, sounded honestly concerned about it. We took it seriously. And yes, there was apparently some guy in the United States who killed a dolphin and was brought up with on criminal charges for that, and that led us to this discussion about the Taji and the movie that was made, and somebody else called in who had seen the movie, and it was, like, really disturbing. And then at the very end of her call, she's like, oh, wait, I've got something else, and started to play something. I was like, see you later. And so that's what she was trying to play last night, was NWA's F the Police. Which
Coming straight from the underground.
Yeah, thankfully they didn't get to that part in the song, which is a great song. We just can't air it. Uncensored on the radio waves. So, sorry about that. Toll-free number 855-450-FREE. You can join us here. More on the Bitcoin crackdown coming up. This is Free Talk Live, and you can join us here. The toll-free number where you can take control of the airwaves is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Tonight, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Daryl.
Skype username is lrn.fm. If you've been thinking about starting up your own website, you can get a special deal because you're a Free Talk Live listener over at HostGator. You go to HostGator.com/FTL. That's /FTL like Free Talk Live, and that gets you 50% off. 50% off of their regular pricing over there at HostGator. They're one of the top hosting companies out there with a 99.99% uptime rating, a simple one-click, easy installation for WordPress. 24/7 over the phone or live chat tech support, and a very intuitive and user-friendly control panel that puts the power of creation and the simplicity of use into your hands. So to get the special offer for you as a Free Talk Live listener, go to hostgator.com/FTL, hostgator.com/FTL, and they get you 50% off of their regular prices. So, Jay, you had further comments on this whole dolphin slaughtering controversy.
Sure. Well, what it comes down to is whale meat. So there's been a big international push to stop the Japanese from whaling.
I've heard about this, yeah.
So they had like the whale wars.
It's been going on a long time.
Oh, right. They've had the whale wars on TV and stuff. You can watch that where the guys go in their boats and they, harass the whalers.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, that right there, I'm not saying I agree with whaling, but I definitely don't agree with these folks that are going out and, hitting them with water cannons and, causing, these fishermen, these whalers to be harmed or injured, on their boats. I don't agree with any violence, even though their intentions, are true and honorable to save the whales.
Yeah.
They're causing violence to other people over. But anyways, what has happened?
Well, now hold on. I mean, if they are defending the whales from being attacked.
Yeah, and you could look at it like that, too.
Don't you have the right to use violence in self-defense? I mean, if somebody's beating my dog, I wouldn't think it'd be a problem to step in and stop that person from doing that.
That dog is your dog. That dog is your property.
Sure, but it wouldn't matter if it wasn't my property. If somebody was beating a dog in the streets,
okay.
I think that it would be completely okay to stop that from happening in the same way that it would be okay to stop someone from beating a kid in the streets.
Okay, but let me sort of play devil's advocate here. Let's say that there's a random goat running through the woods, and somebody decides, I'm going to go kill and eat that goat.
Or a deer.
Yep. Would you jump in front of the rifle to prevent them from shooting the goat?
No, I would not.
If they had a knife and they were running after and going to cut the throat, would you tackle them to prevent them
I wouldn't, because I don't really care about that. But I can understand.
Well, you're the one that said that if you saw somebody beating a dog,
I might do something about that,
and
yeah.
So my question is, if it's something that they're, not just, viciously assaulting for no reason, but they're going to try to kill to eat,
yeah.
Would you act differently?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't do anything about that.
Well, if it's okay to attack these whalers for whaling, then it's probably, then in the same sense, it'd be okay to attack the old man for fly fishing in the river down the road.
There's a slippery slope there.
Where you draw
there's
the line.
There's no doubt about it.
Now, I am very respectful of private property rights, but I have walked into auction barns and seen these, testosterone up cowboys beating on a horse.
Mm.
And I've walked over and grabbed the dude's arm and said, hey, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Mind your own business. Now, this affects me very much because you're doing this here. You're making us all look bad. You're making us horse traders look like, we're these rowdy guys that are beating and abusing our animals.
Right.
And I don't agree with it, but when you got someone doing it in the public, I feel it's my duty to at least stop them on that. I've even gone so far as I've literally taken people's animals from their houses because they were starving them to death.
Yeah.
And I've done that before.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that you're well within your right to do that. The argument would be that those are those people's animals and that's their private property. And I say to that, well, let's hear it out in arbitration. If you've got a problem with somebody kidnapping an animal that you've been abusing, then go ahead, go and argue in court why you should be able to just abuse your animals and see how that goes. I don't think that most compassionate people would stand for that. I think that private property breaks down when you're abusive towards it. I think.
Yeah. So anyways, getting to this issue of protecting the whales has put a major, major price on whale meat in Japan. So what has happened is I've grown up in the horse industry my whole life, and you see these old fat ponies go through an auction, and you hear the auctioneer say, boys, this one's a Jap. And what Jap means is that the pony's got a lot of fat on it, and they look like ripples on their hide. And Jap is... The Japanese market, that pony will bring $5-6 a pound.
Is that a lot?
On the hoof. That is a real lot because Because generally ponies, the slaughter buyers don't even really want ponies, so they're not really worth messing with, you know, for the processing and whatnot. But when a pony japs, because they're going to go to the Japanese market, they bring tremendous money. So what has happened in the past few years, literally directly because of the whaling industry being hammered on so much, is that horses are tremendously valuable right now for slaughter. I was at a horse auction 2 weeks ago in New Holland, Pennsylvania, and I watched horses bring over $1 a pound, and the slaughter buyers were fighting over them. And I seen some ponies that brought $3, $4 a pound, and I actually went down there to buy some ponies and some little mules for a friend of mine. And I had to give big money for these little guys to buy them to compete with the slaughter guys.
But I thought there was, you know, a law against selling horses in the U.S. for slaughter.
Well, so the slaughter buyers don't sit there and say they're buying them for slaughter. They're just regular guys like you and I. Any of us, anybody can go buy a horse at this auction. There is some kind of law, I believe. I don't know if it's a federal law or whatever. But I believe New York State's got something that horses can't even be transported through New York State for slaughter.
Huh.
But horses are and they're hauled all the way up to Canada, you know, from like New Holland or from wherever, you know, by these guys to go to the processing facilities.
In Canada.
In Canada, because that's the only place you can do it. You can't. There's no horse processing facilities in the United States because the federal government won't allow funding for inspectors is what they did. They didn't ban it. They just don't fund the inspectors.
And if they're not inspected, then they can't be in business.
That's correct. And even the private facilities who are ready to operate, they can't even hire the inspectors. It has to be, you know, all go through the funding of the government.
So it's legal to slaughter horses in Canada, but not in the United States?
Well, it's not illegal in the United States. There's no inspector. So, for example, if I had a horse...
So that would make it a violation of some sort of inspection law?
Yeah, so you could literally...
Well, what doesn't that mean? It's illegal by proxy?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
But I could slaughter my own horse if I wanted, or you could, or some private guy could.
Mm-hmm.
And there's actually, in California and Massachusetts, I actually think it is legal to slaughter a horse for human consumption. There is a place in New York that does process them for like bush gardens and all that stuff, old cows and horses, but it's not for human consumption. But what's going on now is they actually, horse meat is becoming tremendously popular in Japan as imitation whale meat. And what they want is they want that horse with the real fat on their meat, and they take the fat and they scrape it off, and then they inject it into the horse meat and they sell it as imitation whale meat. And I talked to a guy about 3 days ago, actually, I said, why are the killer buyers giving so much for horses right now? And he says, well, there's a horse shortage in this country. There's a horse shortage in North America. So this place I've been helping out a lot is called Blue Star Equiculture. It's a horse sanctuary in Palmer, Mass., and they take old carriage horses and retire them forever. It's a nonprofit. It's an awesome operation. And I'm going to run their compost deal this summer for them. Anyways, they rescued a few Shire horses. These are the horses that built America, literally. Well, built the world, really, you know, up until automobiles. And they are being bred now, these horses, and they breed them specifically to be raised for slaughter for the Japanese imitation whale meat market.
And you're saying that because of the whaling crackdown,
correct,
that there's now more horses being slaughtered instead.
Right. That's absolutely correct,
so
yes.
Something's going to get slaughtered, whether it's whales
or horses. So what they're doing with these horses, they're raising them in Canada, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba, and they feed them a very high starch, high sugar diet. So by the time these horses are like 18 to 22 months old, they have
fat.
Well, they have this marbled layer of fat on their meat, so they can do where they inject the fat into the horse meat for the imitation whale.
It's crazy. I mean, how can horse? I mean, I've never had horse before, but I can't imagine it tastes like seafood.
Well, whales are mammals.
True.
They're not
fish. That's a good point. Wow. All right. Toll-free number here tonight, 855-450-FREE. So until the people who are anti-slaughtering can convince people to just everywhere in the world to stop eating any meat, there's going to be some sort of beast that's going
to
be under the knife.
That's why we need lab-grown meat, but GMOs are horrible.
Toll-free number tonight, 855-450-FREE. You're being facetious with the last comment, but...
Right, but they're the same people...
You could have lab-grown meat, is what you're saying.
people are working on it, but the same people that say we need lab-grown meat say GMOs are horrible.
855-450-FREE, Free Talk Live. There are lots of ways to listen to Free Talk Live. Our podcast has been around since podcasts began, and now the FTL feed is loaded with content besides our full show archives. Did you know that we make it easy for you to customize your podcast subscriptions? We have different feeds, one that includes only our full shows, one with just the Daily Digest, and one with just the Edgington Post. You decide what you listen to. It's quick and easy to customize your feeds at feeds.freetalklive.com. That's feeds.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. Dial in toll free. Bring up anything that you want right here. Our number is 855-450-FREE. It's 855-450-3733. We do have Skype, and the Skype username for you is lrn.fm. You can take control of the airwaves. That's the point of the show. Still to come, we got some news about Brexit, and apparently it's good news. Daryl's got that story. That's on the way, plus an update on Jay Noon's property tax situation. We'll share all of that with you. Of course, we'll take your calls and thoughts about whatever's on your mind. But we started the show with an update out of Venezuela about how they are so bad off economically out there that the government, which has access to one of the main, you know, money resources in the world, oil, can't even afford to sell the oil that they have. I mean, it's just a crazy situation. So I was, of course, looking for other Venezuelan updates, and we got one. We did a detailed story about the Venezuelan Bitcoin miners there who have to operate quietly. They have to operate in the underground, basically, because what they're doing is illegal in Venezuela. Not necessarily that it's illegal to mine Bitcoin per se, but it's illegal to use the power provided by the government, because the government is, you know, they run the power company.
Cheap, subsidized power that's just being taken advantage of, because every time things are cheap, people just use them and use them and use them. The same thing with socialized medicine. You know, you got all the hypochondriacs go to the ER with their kids every week or whatever, and it just puts such a drag on it. That's why we need a free market, not stuff for is given away, because the most expensive way to sell anything is to give it away for free.
So in Venezuela, you've got Bitcoin miners who are doing pretty good business. You know, they've got free power, which is really the bulk of what you need to manufacture Bitcoin, or not manufacture, but mine Bitcoin into existence. You got to have hardware, computer hardware that can do the work, and then power to power the hardware. It's a very costly power-wise thing to do. And if power's cheap, then it can make it worthwhile. If the power is expensive, you're going to lose money. So in Venezuela, you can make money on Bitcoin if you don't get caught. And the secret police are tasked with tracking down Bitcoin miners there. And like the police in the United States, who look at power bills to see, oh, there's a big spike in this person's power bill. It's gone up. Maybe they're growing marijuana, like with the lighting that typically can be very expensive to grow marijuana. They're doing the same thing
actually,
with Bitcoin.
Last night at Taco Tuesday, a couple of us were talking about, you know, Trump's proposed border adjustment tax, which means avocados will wind up being 20% more expensive at minimum. And somebody said, well, why don't we just grow avocados here? And I said, well, the climate in New Hampshire isn't conducive to doing that.
Nope.
Now, if you wanted to grow some, then, you know, get a bunch of heat lamps and now the...
Get a greenhouse or something.
Well, get a greenhouse or, you know, like the lamps and then, the power company will see a spike. They're growing marijuana there. And then the cops come in and raid and you just have avocados.
Shoot your dog.
That could happen.
That's why you don't have a dog. Like, the best reason to not have a dog is so it doesn't get shot by the cops.
So here's the latest from Venezuela from NASDAQ.com, and Bitcoin Magazine actually is the original location. It appears the Venezuelan authorities have had enough of Bitcoin. Over the past 2 weeks, police in Venezuela had arrested 8 Bitcoin miners in 3 different cities. While some of them were accused of cybercrime and stealing energy, others were merely selling the Bitcoin mining hardware. In addition to that, the country's main exchange, SurBitcoin, had to halt operations as the company's bank closed their accounts. While the country's economy is in a state of turmoil and the national currency, the bolivar, has been in hyperinflationary freefall for some time, the socialist regime in the Latin American country subsidizes electricity to the point where it's almost free. As covered in a popular article published on Reason.com, that was the one that we shared here, where they actually interviewed some of these miners without revealing their real names and things like that. In November, this has made Bitcoin mining popular among some tech-savvy Venezuelans. Even yields from older secondhand hardware can provide a lifeline to order food, products, and medicine from outside of the country. So they're getting Bitcoin in, and then they're spending that Bitcoin at places like Amazon. Amazon doesn't accept Bitcoin directly, but there are intermediate services like SaveItPurse.com. And
Gift.
And so they're spending their Bitcoin to feed their families and their friends. So this has really helped the people who've been getting into this. And of course, the government's got to put a stop to that. There's no official law against Bitcoin mining in Venezuela, and using the digital currency is legal. Travel agency Destinia decided to ditch the bolivar and exclusively accept Bitcoin. Regardless, as the country's been plagued by scarce electricity and regular blackouts, it appears that abusing the cheap energy for the purpose of Bitcoin mining does not go down well with local authorities. In what was the biggest bust of the past couple weeks, the Policía Nacional Bolivariana, the PNB, raided a warehouse in Valencia, the third largest city in Venezuela. As reported by Reason, the building hosted 11,000 ASIC miners. It's 11,000 pieces of Bitcoin mining hardware.
That's a bunch.
Which allegedly consumed enough electricity for an entire village. The arrested duo has been accused of stealing electricity, but also of cybercrime, financing terrorism, and exchange fraud. In a separate case that same week, four people operating over 300 ASIC machines were arrested by agents from the Cuerpo de Investigaciones Científicas Penales y Criminales, the CICPC, in the relatively small town of Charaliv. Somewhat similarly, these four suspects were charged with electricity theft and internet fraud. Spanish-language Bitcoin news site Crypto Noticias reported, according to the director of the CICPC, the miners had affected, quote, the consumption and the stability, unquote, of the electricity service in the town. And perhaps the most notable case, the PNB also arrested two men from Caracas. As opposed to the other suspects, these men weren't mining Bitcoin. Rather, they were attempting to sell mining equipment through Mercado Libre, an online marketplace. It's currently not clear what they were charged with. And to top it off, Venezuela's biggest Bitcoin exchange, SurBitcoin, had to halt operations. They received a notice from their bank, Banesco, on February 2nd that their bank account would be closed the next day. And let me tell you, I can relate. This has happened to me. I had TD Bank give me a similar notice telling me I had literally one day to go and get the money out of the account. They'll send me the check later anyway, but if I wanted the money right away, I would have had to have gone tomorrow. They overnighted that notice to me, and they don't tell you why they're closing your account. It's just this sort of terse letter that they're exercising their contractual.
We're closing it because.
Yeah, their reason is that they have a contractual, in their agreement, the terms of service, it says somewhere in there, all that legalese, you know, that they have you agree to, it says somewhere in there that we can terminate your account anytime we want, and we don't have to tell you why. And they say, we're exercising that clause in our contract, have a nice day. And when you try to call up and ask them why, like, hey.
We already said because.
Yeah, I was a, 10-year-long customer of your bank. I've been there, banking there. It's been great. I was a happy customer. Couldn't you just maybe give me a hint as to what it was that caused this?
Because.
Yeah, nope.
You don't have a right to a bank account.
No, you don't. You don't.
Yep.
And you don't have a right to an explanation. But
nope.
It doesn't hurt to ask.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And so I'd like to know, hey, I was a good customer. Maybe you could just kind of clue me in. What did I do wrong here? And I believe it was because I was sending money to Bitcoin exchanges. That's what I believe that it was.
And a few guys in Colorado I knew had similar issues with big banks like Wells Fargo.
Yep.
There's a big one out there.
They're all the same. Yep. They'll all cut you off if they find out that you're doing Bitcoin-related business.
And the thing is, these banks are just so spooked about, being involved with any quote-unquote money laundering or trafficking or whatever is a lot of their excuse, because that's basically what the branch manager at the Wells Fargo told the guy in Colorado, that, you know,
it's, they're afraid.
It's, yeah, that's what he said. I'm afraid I'll lose my job, so we, you know, or we'll get fined.
That's what it is. It's not that they've been threatened directly by the government. It's that they believe they could be threatened by the government, and so they'd rather play it safe. So anyway, Banesco told them they're going to close their account. The exchange says they're establishing a new commercial structure to prevent situations like this in the future. And in the meantime, they're recommending customers use Local Bitcoins, which is another website that does international Bitcoin business where you can connect with other people who want to buy and sell Bitcoin. More coming up here. Your thoughts. Welcome. The crackdown on Bitcoin in Venezuela. You can take control of the airwaves. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. Dial toll-free. Join us right here. The number is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. With you tonight, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Daryl.
And here on Free Talk Live, we're all big fans of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency in general, but Bitcoin's the big one. Bitcoin was first to market. It's the beast. It's more valuable than all the other cryptos combined, at least for now. Anyway, if you want to get a wallet for your Bitcoin that also holds other cryptocurrencies, you can go and get Jax at jaxx.io. It's the official wallet of Free Talk Live, and it holds Bitcoin, it holds Ether, it holds Dash, unless you've got the iPhone, which case, for whatever reason, Apple doesn't like Dash. But there's several currencies that that Jax can hold, and there's also Shapeshift integration built right into the app, so you can easily change from one currency into the other. It's frictionless and it's super easy to use. Plus, it's easy to back up your wallet with Jax, which means that if you lose your phone, as long as you've got your backup phrase, your Bitcoin's safe. You can reinstall Jax on any other device and put in that backup phrase, and you'll have access to your Bitcoin and the other cryptos as well. It's amazing, amazingly easy to use that. Go to jax.io and you can download there, or you can go to your Google or Apple App Store. It's also cross-platform, so you can get it for Macintosh, Linux, Windows machines. There's browser plugins for Chrome as well as Firefox. Go to jax.io to learn more about it. Jax is striving to give you command over your digital life. Coins, contracts, currencies, identity, and more. It's your digital command center in the palm of your hand. Jax, the official wallet of Free Talk Live at jaxx.io. We can talk a little more about the crackdown on Bitcoin in Venezuela, but first, it's Andy in Wichita listening via our podcast. Hello, Andy.
Yes, hello.
Hey, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Okay.
And thank you for the advice on Bitcoin. I use localbitcoins.com, and I've had nothing but good things to say about them.
Cool.
And also, what I was actually calling for was to say that Barack Obama was our greatest president.
Why?
Because he ended the Democratic Party.
I thought Democratic Party still exists.
Yeah, well, it's pretty much done now.
You think so?
I've been hearing that for 20-some-odd years.
Let me say one more thing before I hang up, because I want to listen to my answer. Repealing the Johnson Amendment by Donald Trump is what a true leader does. And I will hang up.
What is the Johnson Amendment? What is that?
It is a provision in the U.S. tax code that prohibits all 501c3 nonprofit organizations from endorsing a opposing political candidate. And that's what a true leader does.
All right. Well, Andy,
that's what a true leader does.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Listen.
You got it, man. Thanks. Toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. Yeah, I agree with you, Daryl. The Democratic Party is far from dead. They definitely are split as a result of not Barack Obama, but as a result of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders.
Right, but the Republican Party is split as well. There's
right.
The big government Republicans that call the small government Republicans rhinos, and then there's the small government, except for all of these exceptions where we like big government Republicans, that call the actual big government Republicans rhinos. And so everybody's calling everybody a rhino, and the Republican Party split as well.
I got a friend who says Obama was the greatest president because more guns and ammunition were sold under Obama than any other president.
That may be true. And I think you can give him credit for that. But, you know, as far as the split of the Democratic Party, as far as the Republicans splitting, it's probably going to be mended by the time the next election comes over. Yeah, they'll still have some hard feelings towards the different sides within the party, but you know, this wouldn't be the first time that there are factions within a political party. Now, I've never been involved with the Republican and Democratic parties, but I know that in the Libertarians, there are factions within the Libertarian Party.
Right.
You were a member of the Radical Caucus. Didn't they boot you out or something? What happened with that?
I was the official statement is I was deemed to have resigned by running a limited write-in campaign and not feeling the Johnson.
So the radicals sided with Johnson. They threw down.
Well, they
rather than go with their man.
Do have something in the caucus bylaws that say that you're not allowed to endorse a candidate in opposition to a Libertarian Party nominee.
So even if that candidate
is absolutely horrible,
even if that candidate is in no way a radical libertarian, they'll still get behind him. That's pretty sad. So anyway, yeah, there are political factions within political parties, and they have infighting within political parties, which is an annoying part about being involved with political parties, because anybody can get involved. Anyone who wants to get involved with Republicans or Democrats can just start going to meetings, and if they want to cause trouble by trying to take over, let's say, the Libertarian Party, they can do that, and there's very little that you can do about it besides some sort of purity purge.
Although it is a little more difficult, to quote unquote take over the Libertarians.
Why?
Because with the Libertarian Party, there's at least membership dues, whereas for the Republican Party in New Hampshire, anybody can pay $2 to run as a delegate for the Republican Party.
Really?
And you don't have to be a card-carrying member of the Republican Party to wind up being a delegate to the Republican State Convention.
Yeah, same thing in Massachusetts, as long as you were a registered Republican, because that was the Ron Paulers are trying to do in 2012 was get a bunch of delegates. But what they did is they ended up basically the Republican hierarchy in Massachusetts axed, as they did in pretty much all the other states, axed all the pro-Ron Paul delegates.
Mm-hmm.
What they wanted everyone to do if you were a delegate was to sign an affidavit saying you're going to support Romney in 2012. And my friend Dave Kopasz, who's does Red Pill Politics, he's a Western Mass guy, and he's also in Grafton a lot. He was a delegate that was basically told, if you don't, give your allegiance to Romney, then we're axing you, we're removing you. And they did. Because they figured out what the Ron Paulers basically figured out after 2008 what they had to do on the state levels to, it's the delegates that matter. And everybody knows, it's just that pays attention to people don't actually pick these, the delegates.
Yeah, anybody that's a threat to the status quo, they're going to work their best to get them out of that system. And that's what they did to the Ron Paul folks. It's what they did to the Bernie supporters.
Same exact thing.
And they're going to do everything they can to continue to sideline those folks. But most of these people are, they're party adherents. They're not going to go to the Green Party. They're going to stick it out. They're going to stick it out within the Democratic Party. And they're going to try again in 4 more years. And, they'll probably fail.
But there was a lot of Republicans who came to the Ron Paul, camp in 8 and 12, and a lot of them figured out how corrupt the system was. So I'm really hoping a lot of the Bernie folks figured out and understand it, and maybe they'll move, to the Libertarian platform or, just become anarchist or whatever, because it has to stick with some of them.
Well, they have to have a paradigm shift before they can do those things. I mean, if you believe in Bernie Sanders, you're probably a socialist, and so to join the Libertarians.
I've talked to a lot of people who've actually had a little bit of a paradigm shift. They're coming over to the ideas of anarchy.
The toll-free number tonight is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. I prefer the ideas of liberty, personally.
Yeah.
But we can continue, and you can take control of the airwaves here on Free Talk Live. Ross Ulbricht was convicted in early 2015 of running the infamous Silk Road Underground Market. the Silk Road was a gift to humanity and helped reduce the harms brought on by drug prohibition. For this good deed, Ross has been sentenced to life in prison with no possibility of parole. Now, an appeal is Ross's only chance, and he needs your support. Please visit FreeRoss.org, where you can contribute via various methods, including Bitcoin. Visit FreeRoss.org. That's FreeRoss.org. It's Free Talk Live. Dial toll-free. Join us here if you'd like. You can take control of the airwaves, bring up anything you want, or comment on something we've already discussed or are discussing. The toll-free number for you is 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. Tonight in studio, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Daryl.
If you want to reach people with the ideas of liberty, one of the ways you can do it is from the back of your car or truck or whatever it is you drive with LibertyStickers.com. You can reach thousands of people with a bumper sticker, and you know people love to read them. So check out the vast selection of witty, poignant, pithy, and downright bombastic liberty-oriented messages at libertystickers.com. That's libertystickers.com as we continue with your calls and thoughts to Richard in Texas on the phones here. Richard, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, great. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Okay, I had a question about the secession movement of states to secede. If you do, in any one state, if you do manage to get the 51% or more to have the vote to secede and you pull it off, does that not initiate aggression upon the rest of the people in the state who don't want the state to secede?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Daryl, what do you think about that?
The existence of government aggresses against people already. So, you know, my preferred thing is if you don't want to secede, then you should be allowed to not secede, and there should be a separation of government and geography. But right now, that seems to not be a very popular concept.
Yeah, I'm sure that if somebody wanted to keep paying money into the federal government, they would probably keep taking checks from folks who were in a seceded state. You know, as far as what you're saying, though, is that this political system is going to force itself, whatever the current construction of it is, it's going to force itself on people who don't consent to it. That much is true. But ultimately, that's the similar. There's a similar argument that I think, you know, we've heard before, which is that, oh, well, you know, you libertarians, you just want to get elected and take away government programs. Isn't that also aggression? Aren't you aggressing by forcing your political system, which is a smaller government or no government political system, on people who want to have a big government?
As for secession to really work, in my opinion, I believe secession has to happen with the actual individual claiming independence, declaring independence, actually, literally, from these so-called governmental agencies. And because the governmental agencies, you know, like of the state of New Hampshire, you know, is not this land. It's just a name on a piece of paper. I mean, there's the New Hampshire Nation that was, you know, part of this, you know, Articles of Confederation and the original Constitution, which is a different deal. As I mentioned, you know, Chris Gronsky gets into that stuff, and I really think he's probably got like the best thing going for an actual secession movement with individual people literally removing themselves from the system, you know, declaring themselves independent and removing themselves from the federal system with his passport process, you know, changing your status from that of a United States citizen to that of a state citizen, which is actually really good for, you know, it's a lot better, you know, than being a federal citizen, than being a state citizen, and not the state of New Hampshire, but the nation state of New Hampshire.
Right, you're not forcing your way on somebody else.
Right, right.
You're just declaring freedom for yourself.
You're peacefully removing yourself from it, and he's created a process to do this.
So, yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from there, Richard. Is that like a legitimate concern of yours, or was just sort of an objection that was raised?
No, it was honestly a question. I'm kind of new to the liberty movement, and I was honestly curious.
Right. So, I mean, generally as a libertarian, you would support the non-aggression principle, the idea that it's not okay to use aggressive force to achieve political or social goals. I think most libertarians would also agree that they still want to roll back the government because a smaller government is a less aggressive government. The argument that a smaller government, which of course, in most cases, getting the federal government out of the way and seceding is going to result in a lower burden of government,
yes,
all in all. So lessening the government is ultimately the goal of many libertarians. And I can understand the argument that, hey, you're forcing that on me, but ultimately that's the government that's forcing things on you. The libertarians are just trying to lessen the amount of force that's being used.
And generally when I hear these sort of objections, and there are other things that wind up getting said, but basically what I'm hearing is, I've heard some libertarian terms and I'm just going to use them against libertarians to try to claim that they're actually the aggressors because I don't understand what libertarianism actually is.
Well, to be fair, that is not what I was going for at all. It was an honest concern, and I get what you're saying. Basically, it's an artificial problem created by the fact that the federal government aggresses against us.
Yes.
And so, no, I was not trying to.
Right, and I wasn't saying that you necessarily were. When I was down in Orlando at the LP National Convention, there were some people. Yes, there were some people at the convention when we were trying to wind up getting an actual libertarian on the ballot by getting Larry Sharp as the VP, there were some people saying, why are you trying to violate the NAP by giving Gary a VP that he doesn't want? You're forcing people to get married.
The NAP is the non-aggression principle.
Yes. And basically, well, you know, the people have heard the terms aggression and non-aggression principle and had no clue what the party bylaws were, that the party bylaws allow the delegates to actually choose both the presidential and the vice presidential candidate, and trying to claim that, you know, I was some big government statist by trying to have an actual libertarian as a Libertarian Party nominee.
Richard, anything else you want to talk about tonight?
Not really. I'm trying to get you guys down here to play in Amarillo, Texas, but I'm not having any luck so far.
Well, all you can really do is contact the local talk station program directors and ask nicely, and you know, it doesn't usually happen overnight, but if they hear it from a few different folks, and then they hear from me, and over a few years it might end up happening. You never know. Hey, thanks for the call. Of course, you can also put your own station on the air and, you know, risk the FCC raiding your house, which is a relatively small risk. If you want to learn more about that, you can go to station.lrn.fm, and there's all kinds of information about that there. So you can always take matters into your own hands. Thanks for the call tonight, man. I appreciate hearing from you. Our toll-free number is 855-450-FREE. The FCC, by the way, there's been some interesting news. We haven't really covered it yet here on Free Talk Live, but the new chairman of the FCC was a previous board member or whatever. So, you know, he's not brand new to the FCC. He's been around since 2012, but he's one of the Republicans who were in the minority during the Obama administration. And they do seem to be rolling back some of the regulations on radio stations and television stations. There actually have been a few different things that they've just gotten rid of since Trump was in office. So, you know, Trump's bad on a lot of stuff, but at least on the FCC side of things, it does seem that the FCC's nosiness and busyness is getting a little bit lessened, which is good. And there's actually another headline about they're planning on rolling back net neutrality as well at the FCC. So again, talk is cheap, but so far they actually have put a stop to some of the requirements. So I'll give you one tangible example. I've been reading in the industry headlines and the industry publications. I subscribe to the, you know, talk radio kind of business emails, like these daily emails that come out, and they're following these things pretty closely. One of the things that radio stations have had to do forever is have what's called a public file. And that means that they've got like drawers and drawers of paperwork that the FCC has required them to just hold on to. So in case you want to come into the radio station in your area and look at their public file, you can see all the complaints or whatever it is, you know, messages. I don't know what all's in there, but basically the FCC.
I think the logs of here's the programs that we ran and here's what commercials and here's the songs.
I don't know. Honestly,
that could really add up.
I think it's correspondence mostly, but you could be right. I don't know what's in there. I've never looked at it. And I've worked in radio.
And then I think some of the stuff, the public affairs programming
They've rolled back the regulations on that. So it's now, I don't think they have to have physical copies of them anymore. They may still have to have a digital copy of those communications because radio stations are supposed to provide some level of public service, so on and so forth. 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. Free Talk Live. It's Free Talk Live. Dial in toll-free. Join us here. If you'd like, you can take control of the airwaves. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. We've got Skype, and you can Skype in at username lrn.fm. With you tonight, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Daryl.
And, of course, you can also call in toll-free, 855-450-FREE. That's where we're going, is to the phones, to the fun. And then coming up, we can talk a little bit more about Bitcoin on the way as well. Jay Noon's going to update us on property taxes, what is going on with his odyssey that is continuing where he has not paid, and nor did his father pay property taxes.
Since 1983.
In Massachusetts. So we'll give you the update on that. And if we get the chance, Brexit news as well. You'd heard about Britain voting to leave the EU. Well, what's the latest on that? Daryl's got that story. It's all on the way here. Let's go first, though, to Sarah in New Mexico. You're on Free Talk Live. Hello, Sarah.
Oh, yes. So Santa Fe, they are wanting to put the sugar tax again. You know, they talked about it 6 months ago, and it got dropped.
Now, wait, when you say sugar tax, do you mean a tax on raw sugar or a tax on sugary products like drinks?
Well, they're mostly concerned about soda pop, you know, sugary drinks.
Right.
That's what I was told.
Let me, reiterate exactly what these taxes are, because we've covered them numerous times. It's in most cases where they've been implemented, a per ounce tax. So Philadelphia, 1.5 cent per ounce.
It's crazy. It's a crazy tax.
And these taxes are being added to discourage people from purchasing sugary beverages. But one thing that Sarah fails to realize is that, this tax, as with all taxes, does affect behavior and it discourages things. So when you tax income, you discourage people from making more income.
I heard that years ago there was something about a tea tax that kind of got ugly.
Oh, yeah, that was back in 1773, crates of tea were thrown in Boston Harbor.
But before you go on, Sarah, Daryl, I just want to ask you a question to clarify what you just said there. You said it's going to discourage behavior. Isn't that the intention, is to stop people from drinking or to discourage the drinking of sugary drinks?
That's the intent. But the people that advocate for these taxes don't realize that every tax affects the way people behave.
Mm-hmm.
So when you tax income, you wind up discouraging people from making increased income because they don't want more of their money stolen.
That's true. That happens. But ultimately, go ahead, Sarah.
I mean, that's only one part of it. But a lot of people quit smoking because it got too expensive. It's like $6.50 a pack.
That's a true statement. I mean, Mark Edge, who's one of our regular co-hosts here, he's taken some time off, but he says that's one of the reasons why he quit smoking, was because the taxes were raised on it and he didn't want to send any more money to the government. So isn't that an argument in favor of the, these taxes, these so-called sin taxes?
Well, I've got a better argument. Good ideas don't require force. And if you're concerned that somebody's doing something that is, possibly bad for them, then, try to educate them about why their choices are bad.
I agree with you.
Education is they run out of money to buy it. Like children, they get allowances. They don't have enough money to buy candies. Dad, why are you so in support of having all the kids drink all the sugar? And they kill themselves, and they have diabetes. That's what you're supporting.
Yeah, you just support dead children, Daryl. What's up with that?
No, I'm not supporting dead children. And
you're supporting fat children, Daryl. What's up with that?
No, because I'm not giving the little fat kids a soda pop. Or where I grew up, a Coke. It doesn't matter if it's Pepsi,
they call
Mountain
everything
Dew.
Coke.
Everything is Coke.
In Alabama?
It's all Coke.
I noticed sugar beet farmers don't like this at all.
Look, you actually ran for governor. Why would mothers seriously want to vote for you?
No, he ran for president.
Wasn't running for governor. No, I'm concerned about them, and I'll reiterate that good ideas don't require force. You educate people about why they're making bad decisions and what decisions they can make that are good decisions. That's not me advocating for, you know, some little 3-year-old spoiled brat being given a Mountain Dew every time he cries.
Now,
those people are bad parents. I'm not going to, you know, yank the kids away from them. I'm going to try to educate them about why they're being an idiotic parent by shoving a Mountain Dew down their 3-year-old's throat.
I got a better idea.
Do you have money to pay? Are you going to start an organization, raise money to pay for campaign and to educate people? Do you have energy and money for that? If you don't have money, why are you interfering with other people trying to help children from getting diabetes? That's what I want to know. Why are you in support of the insulin and the sugar companies?
I don't give money to the insulin companies, Sarah, and I'm not advocating for taxes, which is force. You're the one advocating for force on people.
Sarah, let me
wish you could see that you're advocating for force.
Let me run something by you, Sarah. Sugar beets is what most of the bad sugar in this country is derived from. You know, sugar beets are GMO. They use a lot of chemicals and pesticides on them. They have you know, Roundup sprayed on them, then the Roundup's absorbed by them sugar beets. So, like, most of your sodas and most of your sugar products are either going to have high fructose corn syrup, which is from corn, or sugar beets. Now, sugar beets and corn are very, very heavily government subsidized, so they are readily available. They are really cheap because the government is literally paying farmers big money to grow these crops. And there's all and in fact, the way it's happening is, it's really hard, like on cane sugar, from what I understand, to even get a crop insurance on it. But if you have Roundup ready, Monsanto certified sugar beets growing, you're going to get government subsidized crop insurance. So these farmers have a huge incentive to grow these crops. And if they don't go quite right, the government bails them out in the form of a crop insurance. This is kind of how they're
hiding. That's the federal government.
That's the federal government.
So you get the federal government subsidizing the production of sugary things.
Absolutely.
And then on the other end, you got cities like Santa Fe that's taxing the consumption.
Well, Santa Fe's talking about taxing it. So far, it's Philadelphia and either Bakersfield or Berkeley in California.
It's more than that. It says here in this story that I've got from SantaFeNewMexican.com, Santa Fe's soda tax would be identical to one authorized this week. This was written back in November. So it's also happening in Boulder, Colorado.
That's one that got approved by voters.
Also, three cities in California, including San Francisco, have approved a 1 cent per ounce tax. So it's multiple California cities.
If the idea is to make these sugary drinks more expensive, well, then get rid of the subsidies. If you get rid of the subsidies, then these farmers are going to be like, well, hey, we're not going to raise sugar beets because we're not going to have this incentive to do it. And then the price of sugar is going to go up. Now, there are sugars that are good, like honey, maple syrup. You know, they're naturally derived. They're not.
Bananas and apples have a lot of sugar, which is why people on a paleo diet disavow fruit, because fruit has natural sugar.
So now the honey industry is I have no evidence of that being subsidized. Maple syrup producers, I don't know of any of them being subsidized.
But maple candies are expensive.
Yeah. Yes. Well,
of course.
Because it's a product that takes a lot of work, and there's no and it's not, you know, really mechanized too well. You know, this is why commercial farming, like just corn and wheat and soy, and that's all food. Actually, I've lost a lot of weight. That's all food. I really try
you
to stay away from is government subsidized food.
I want to say something. There's no money in it. How are they going to make money off you if you're healthy eating maple syrup and honey? How is the insulin company going to make money off you when you don't buy their insulin?
That's not my problem.
That's my
point. I don't care if they make money or not.
But I'm just saying the reason why the sugar industry, like you said, are government subsidized because it's backed up by the insulin companies. Because they want you to bring all this unhealthy sugar, and we're going to all come down with diabetes at age 16, and they want you to buy their insulin that they make out of an algae that is so cheap, and they'll sell it to you very expensive. This whole feeds the whole industry of the insulin companies, and I'm very disappointed. You need to be thinking about the well-being of our children, and all you think about is letting everybody do whatever they want to do. You know?
As long as people aren't harming others, then yes, you can do whatever you want to do.
I got
Stop trying to force your will on everybody, Sarah.
Sarah.
You horrible, horrible statist.
Look, thanks for the call tonight, Sarah. I got news for you. You can go ahead and raise the tax, and the kids are going to buy it anyway. Because children have nothing but disposable income. They don't have to pay rent. So
and if the sugar tax goes up and the sugar sales fall, then the government's going to give more subsidies to these poor sugar beet farmers and these poor corn farmers so they can keep on
producing.
Down. It ain't going to matter.
So, by the way, the proposal in Santa Fe is 2 cents per ounce tax. So twice the tax of what they're doing in San Francisco. 855-450-FREE. This is Free Talk Live. Take control of the airwaves. Bring up anything.
I've been told no in many different ways.
I give you an order and you're going to obey it.
Well, George, you can go this way.
You can't do that and you have to leave here.
You cannot bring signs into the rally.
Walk with me.
Well, I'm comfortable here, actually.
Bureaucrats have a funny way of telling people no.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain.
Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. You can order your copy of the Director's Cut DVD now at victimlesscrimespree.com.
Free Talk Live.
Hey, it's Free Talk Live. You can dial on in here toll free. Take control of the airwaves as we launch into the third hour of the program. With you in the studio tonight, it's Ian,
Jay,
and Daryl.
Skype username is lrn.fm. We're going to get an update from Jay about his property tax situation that has been brewing for a few decades between him and his father and on some property down in Massachusetts. We'll get you the update on that. And also, your calls and thoughts are welcome. Plus, a Brexit update coming up as well that Daryl is going to share with us. All of that, if we can fit it in, but your calls come first, so let's go to Skype, where Mike is on the line in Ohio. Mike, go ahead.
Thanks, Ian. So I don't think the Democratic Party's dead. I think the exact opposite. I think they're going to come back with a Bernie Sanders 2.0, maybe a little bit younger, and it's going to be a lot worse. It's going to be I think Hillary Clinton with a divided Congress, I think in 5 or 6 years, we might actually be wishing for that. Now, I'm all for Trump doing as many, you know, liberty-oriented things as possible, you know, FCC, or if in theory he does something with Obamacare or the tax rate or whatnot. But I got the exact opposite feeling. I heard the guy earlier say that the Democratic. I think they're enrolling people to vote now. I mean they're not going to do. He barely won, you know, this time around, and I got the feeling, you know.
Democrats are going to crank up their machine and possibly be able to unseat Trump in a re-election bid in 4 years? Is what you're saying?
No doubt, because they're going to run a stronger candidate, and they're going to have the, Trump is going to wear on everybody.
It would break the trend that has been going since the Clinton administration. I mean, it was Clinton 2 terms, Bush 2 terms, Obama 2 terms. I mean, so the last time that there's been an only a 1-term president was George H.W. Bush.
Yeah, Trump just wears on people too much. I'm afraid his popularity will decline, and
I think next year we will have a really good idea of exactly what is going to happen in 2020. And the reason I say that is the midterm elections, generally the party that's in power winds up losing some seats.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is whether or not the Democrats will wind up taking majorities in both houses of Congress, or will they only, you know, just pick up some seats but not necessarily take a majority. I think if they take majorities in both houses and wind up, you know, quote unquote, stopping Trump from doing some of whatever Trump wants to do, then they might wind up having a, you know, better shot of, you know, having Trump be only a one-term president.
I would like to see a gridlock to where, like, you know, the House of Representatives are set up so they're, you know, mostly Democrat, to where everything they do, Trump hopefully vetoes them, and then they just keep on vetoing one another. That's what I want to see. Nothing.
That's always nice then when that happens. Yeah,
that would be best case scenario here.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you can safely predict the future based on what has happened politically in the past, because Trump is such an outlier, you know, that he wasn't a lot of people don't think that Trump should have happened based on kind of the way things have always been. And I don't know if whatever the next election is going to be is going to hold true to past trends. You know, I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, Daryl's—he's the expert in this. He studies this. But in the midterms, in the electorate, I mean the voting demographics and electorate a lot different than what it is for the president. Don't usually it's more hardcore. It would be more Republican like voters in the midterms. And I agree with everything you guys said, because if you look at when Barack Obama from 2010 till now, until he left, when we had a divided government, he didn't really get a lot of his stuff done, and we had some economic productivity. Now, I don't know how much of it is inflated and yada yada yada, but that a gridlock is a good thing.
Yeah, sure.
And at least with 4 years, if the Congress did flip, then you would have Trump who's very sensitive anyway, and so he would veto everything that they do, and then vice versa. But
not necessarily, because, you know, let's kind of go back a ways to when Reagan had a Democratic Congress, and Reagan didn't veto everything they did.
Reagan increased the size of government dramatically.
Exactly. They wound up compromising on acceptable increases to where everybody was happy. Yeah.
One thing's
for
libertarians. Sure. 4 years from now, the government's going to be bigger, more oppressive, more expensive than it's ever been. And, you know, I will not make predictions about what's going to happen. But was there anything else you wanted to share tonight, Mike?
Yes, real quickly, sugar, and I heard Jay speak on this, but if the government cut out the subsidies, and if you had a free market, things just like have you heard of GT kombucha, which
sure.
is actually pretty healthy for you? Well, that guy, they made him take his drink off the store shelves a couple years ago because it had trace elements of alcohol in it,
and it hasn't been the same since. I've been drinking that stuff for years. I love it.
Yes, and listen, it's actually healthy. But the thing is, you don't go to the store and chug five of those down.
Just to get a buzz, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. If you eat an entire loaf of bread, you'll wind up getting a bit of a buzz. But nobody's advocating for we should remove bread from the shelves because trace amounts of alcohol.
If you're desperate for, a drunken buzz, you can just go swig some cough medicine
mouthwash.
Or mouthwash. That's what I was thinking of. That's what the bums will do.
Kids in school did it when I was in high school.
I've also heard that if you take a loaf of bread and some cheap cologne and you pour the cologne into the bread and then you squeeze it.
Oh, man.
I've never tried this. I heard it from somebody that used to hang out with a bum.
Thanks for the call,
you
Mike.
Like, when you're very
desperate.
And
damn.
All you have is like some cheap cologne and a loaf of bread.
Because they put stuff in the mouthwash.
You MacGyver it a little bit.
Because they're supposed to put stuff in the mouthwash to make it unpalatable and make it supposedly not good to drink. But the bums will still drink it anyway, because if if there's blue laws that restrict the sale of alcohol, like let's say after midnight or before 6 a.m., then the bums will they'll go into Walgreens, they'll buy mouthwash, and they'll just get drunk on that.
Yeah.
Toll-free number here, 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. So, Jay Noon, what is the latest on the property tax thing, and let's take it back with as brief of a recap as you can on what the past was first.
So this particular property would be my father's farm in Palmer, Mass.
Not the house that you lost a few years ago in Palmer.
So if people Google search my name, like Jay Noon and Cop Block, or Jay Noon and Free Keen, or Jay Noon and Town of Palmer, all them videos show up, or you and Pete Air, and you know, all this great stuff you
classic
guys
get. Classic videos.
Yeah, they are. All the time I'm getting people just, wow, watch that video. That's so funny. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so none of that really has anything to do with my farm. So the farm belongs to me and my brothers, and my father passed away 4 years ago. And my dad bought the farm in 1983. He never registered the deed. A lawyer just went in and registered the deed like a year later. And my father was taken to court in 91 for not paying the property taxes.
By the town.
And he asked them for the instrument he signed that required him to participate in a real estate tax scheme. And the town had 30 days to produce it. The next court date, the town did not show up. The case was dismissed.
Wow.
In 2010-ish, 2011.
How do you get a court trial on non-payment of taxes?
You can't. You cannot in Massachusetts.
So what happened there? How did he get one?
Well, it was a hearing.
A hearing.
That's all it was a hearing in 1991. And
how
it
do you
wasn't
get a hearing?
Well, they have hearings at land court. So I don't know if for some reason it was in the local Palmer court back then. I was only 11 years old when that happened.
I don't know if they do that in New Hampshire. I don't know.
So several places in the Massachusetts Constitution is pretty explicit about this. You know, you need a trial to take someone's property.
Hmm.
But they don't consider it property. They consider it real estate. So anyways, and then 2011, the town of Palmer filed again in a court called Land Court.
Let's continue this in moments. The latest on the property tax saga with Jay Noon. Your calls and thoughts are also welcome. 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. Coming up also, Brexit, the latest there. This is Free Talk Live. This is Free Talk Live. You're invited to take control of the airwaves here. Bring up whatever's on your mind. Our number is 855-450-FREE. That's 855-450-3733. Joining you in the studio, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Daryl.
Skype username is lrn.fm. And also, if you support Free Talk Live and you want to help the show out, one of the ways you can do that is by shopping with us. You go to shop.freetalklive.com. And you can enter Amazon through the links you'll find there. There's Amazon US, UK, and Amazon Canada. And you just go in there and get your shopping taken care of. And Free Talk Live will get a cut of the purchase price when you do that. So start your shopping at shop.freetalklive.com. As we continue here, of course, you can bring up anything that you want. We've been talking with Jay Noon, who's one of our he's our Wednesday night co-host. Jay, we've got a long history of you, in the show talking about the saga of property taxes where you were in Palmer, Massachusetts. You didn't pay taxes on your house. They came and took it from you after we stopped them for a while by showing up in mass and occupying the property on the day they were supposed to take it. That seemed to put it off for several months. But then you were telling us you're about to give us an update on your dad's property, which is now your and your brother's property after he passed away a few years ago. Your dad never paid taxes on that property.
He never did.
And when he went to court, he demanded to see the signed instrument that obligated him to the tax agreement, which they never came to court to show it. And so then as a result, they dropped the case. That's, I think, where you about where you left off in the story.
And that was in 1991. And then in 2011... the town of Palmer filed a case in land court. And the land court is basically one of these administrative agencies, you know, created in the 1880 something, you know, after the Civil War, after, you know, the state of Massachusetts or Commonwealth of Massachusetts Corporation was created. Anyway, so we go to land court to these hearings. We went to two hearings up there, and we filed a lot of paperwork. We pretty much did all the right stuff. We demanded, you know, for the injured party to fill the consideration of the claim. We wanted to know who the man or woman was that had a claim. Stacks and stacks of paperwork. Really, we hammered them. They just blanketly denied everything. We we really hammered on a demand for a trial by jury of peers.
Now, when was this? I missed that.
This was 2011.
Okay.
Oh, well, they filed in 2010, I think. And then I think in 2011 went to a hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but what we did do is we put an update of a loyal title or what's called a land patent on the property. I did the same thing to my house. And this actually, from what I understand, has clouded the title to the house. The guy who bought the house at auction, the first guy that bought it, wasn't able to get a bank mortgage. He wasn't able to borrow $15,000 on a house that was appraised for like $160,000 because of title.
Because of the clouded title.
Because of the title issue. I never got a real example of that. So the house was offered to the next guy behind him bid, and he still owns the house. And actually, there is someone living in it now. I did notice that the other day when I drove by there. But he tried selling the house, and I heard through the grapevine that he wasn't able to because that guy, Jay Noon, did something to screw the title up, is what got back to me. So, anyways, we did an update of a loyal title on this property on Old Warren Road property, which is a 10-acre farm. And what has happened is we've gone back and forth in court. So the town denied the trial. In fact, I have on the internet all the transcripts, the written transcripts to the actual land court hearings, and it is just blatantly like hilarious how they just deny everything. They don't read any documents. They don't take anything into consideration.
A lot of times they won't even sign the documents. I think you ran into that at one point in your house.
So basically, they just deny every document. There's no one ever presents a claim.
When you say they deny the documents, as in like they're looking at the documents and they say, that's not a document, that doesn't exist?
They just deny it. They're just like, denied. You know.
So you're saying the court denies the motions.
Right, right.
Saying like the document doesn't exist. I know you're holding a piece of paper, but that doesn't exist.
Yeah, we did. Thanks for clarifying that, Daryl. We did motions for a demand. We actually did demands. We didn't really do motions. We did demand for trial by judgment of peers. And they're like, that's denied. In land court, you don't get a trial by judgment of peers. In fact, you don't even get a trial. You don't even get a judge. What there is a recorder. Deborah J. Patterson was this recorder in land court. And so what they did is they issued a final judgment. Before they even issued a final judgment, we removed the case from land court into federal court, which I kind of think was not the right way to go. What we should have done was go to appeals court in Massachusetts and then go to the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts and then go to federal court. Because that's actually really cheap for a guy like me to do who's willing to do the paperwork and just file the fees. I could have made it cost the town probably millions of dollars. But it did
by going through the different levels of court.
Going through different levels, which would have been a better thing to do. So we went to federal court, did what's called a removal, remove the case into federal court.
Okay.
And then that was basically the federal court was like, well, that you haven't been injured. You haven't stated an injury upon which relief could be granted.
So no standing.
So they said we had no standing. What federal court did do, though, it was pretty interesting in that, is they tried, the first thing the town tried to do was say that us Noon boys, had no standing because, you know, there was no will to the property and this, that, and the other thing. And the federal court actually was on our side for that particular deal. They were like, yes, Jay Noon and his brothers absolutely have standing as in the place of Spud Noon.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of cool. And so they kicked the case out. But yeah, so they kicked the case out. And so I appealed it in federal appeals court.
Mm-hmm.
And federal appeals court said that basically until the town does something, like actually remove, I can't remember the actual language off the top of my head. I should have read this a couple of days ago. But until the town does something, we basically don't have a case. So on paper, the town saying, hey, we're going to, you know, come get you or whatever, or they got this judgment from land court. Oh, and the land court judgment. So if you guys Google any of these videos, Jay Noon property tax, Town of Palmer, or Jay Noon Free Keen, or any of that, in a handful of these videos, I actually show the document that has no signature on it.
Yeah, I remember that.
For the house. It's the same exact thing for the farm. I have another friend in.
This is the taking document, the thing that authorizes to take your property from you.
So
no bureaucrat signed it where they were supposed to sign it.
There's no signature on it whatsoever. So if you look up Hampden County Registry of Deeds and type in Spud Noon or Joseph Noon is what my house was under. Spud Noon was my father. You will see and then in a search put a tax taking or finding or tax taking, but you can read all these documents and you'll see the document that's actually recorded in the county records office has no signature on it. And that is what the town is relying on, that they own the property, is an unsigned document.
So what's the status right now of the farm?
So the status right now is they gave us till February 2nd to remove the property from the farm, or they were coming in and nobody
showed up. That's like tractors
yet.
Or whatever, farm equipment's on there. Let's talk more about that, the latest on the property seizing process. 855-450-FREE, 855-450-3733. It's Free Talk Live.
DVD, books, music, instruments, periodicals, computers, software, electronics, photo, cell phone, office products, home and garden, bed and bath, furniture, kitchen, pet supplies, automotive, hardware, apparel, shoes, jewelry, grocery, healthcare, sports and outdoors, toys, games, used and more. It's a department store at your fingertips. Shop.freetalklive.com. Get all your shopping done, get a great deal, and a portion of your purchase goes to benefit Free Talk Live when you enter Amazon via shop.freetalklive.com.
Yeah! It's Free Talk Live. Dial toll free to join us. Our number here is 855-450-FREE. Coming up, a Brexit update. That's still on tap. Of course, your calls and thoughts are welcome about whatever you want to discuss. With you tonight, it's Ian.
Jay.
And Daryl.
And our Skype username is lrn.fm. Now, if you're going to call us on Skype, you do need to send a contact request first. We'll approve it, and then once you're approved, you're good to go to call from that point forward. We're talking about property taxes, something that a lot of people wish they didn't have to pay, and very, very few people have actually done the protest of not paying property taxes. And Jay, you're one of those people.
That's right.
It's an honor to know you because very, very few people are willing to put their property on the line to test out whatever theory they might have about how to get out of that system. And you've done it. You've lost your home as a result of that.
Yep.
Your father had a farm that he never paid property taxes on pretty much successfully for quite a long time, right up until you said around 2011 or so, when the town of Palmer, Massachusetts came at you again. You ended up going to land court, I believe is what
that's
it
what
was
they call it.
Called. You ended up somehow removing that from land court to the federal courts, which you say you thought was a mistake, but maybe you didn't realize that at the time.
Yeah, we didn't know any better at the time.
The federal courts booted that back saying, no, you don't have standing in this case. And that's kind of where we were in the story. I'm boiling down to 10 seconds, what has taken us the last segment and a half to talk about. So go ahead.
So to fast forward, the town got this judgment with no signature on it, which we covered.
Now, where did that come from? Was that the land court?
So that comes from land court.
Okay.
So there's a signature line, but there's no signature on it. And in fact, one of my good friends who did a lot of this legwork with me, she's an activist from Miller's Falls, Massachusetts. Her and I went to land court several times. We took a lot of trips up there, got to know Boston real well.
And so you have to go all the way to the Capitol to go to this court?
Correct, yeah.
Wow.
So anyways, we looked through all the land court findings, the judgments, and actually the people in land court, in all these courts, I'm very, very sweet to them, very nice to them. I have
the clerks.
Very little issues with anybody in any of these places. And this lady helps us look through all the judgments, and we looked through judgments for like the past year, and we flipped through thousands of them, and not a single one has a signature.
But there's a line for a signature.
There's a line for a signature, and there's no signature.
Is there a printed name underneath?
There is a printed name underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
But still, an unsigned check is no good.
Mm.
An unsigned anything is no good. And these lower courts just accept it.
Right.
So one of the strategies I'm going to take is whoever the sheriff or constable is that actually comes to do whatever they're going to do, I'm actually going to put a claim in against their insurance bond. Because
he's enforcing an unsigned order?
We're going to go based simply on that.
Okay,
Let
me stop you there. So you've got an order from the land court saying the town can take this property?
No,
is that what it says?
It doesn't even say that. It says taking in a finding and tax taking case is what it says. Mm-hmm. And it says, and the finding is in favor of the town.
Okay.
That's all it says on there. And
so the town then went ahead and did the tax deeding. They deeded the property to themselves.
Yep. They did do that. Yep.
Right. And so now they're saying we don't want the stuff on the property.
So they went up there.
They're claiming now that that's theirs. They're claiming the property.
They're saying it's abandoned property, mm-hmm. and there's abandoned property on it. I got a document saying that the property's been abandoned, and there's motor vehicles up there and stuff, and mm-hmm. cars and trucks and equipment. So what
stuff you might find on a farm?
Yeah. So what they did is they went and put notices on everything and said you had by February 2nd, you know, had to have it all removed. Or
notice of forfeiture or something like that.
A notice of that it was abandoned. So what I did mm-hmm. is I went to the courthouse and I filed some documents stating that the property is not abandoned, that it's owned by my brothers and I, and you guys are to stay off it, basically. And then I served the town with a document. I also included some other exhibits in that document that my brothers and I have waived the benefits to all things that are created by the state. We have don't want any state or town benefits, and this is something that I just started learning about a couple of years ago. So moving on with this, when they do make a move, whoever the constable is or the sheriff, their bond is going to have a claim against it. It'd be just like making a claim against somebody's automobile insurance, essentially, if they damage your car or their car causes you damage.
Now, who do you file that with?
So the company is called Bursum and Bloom, I believe.
This is the bonding agency?
The bonding agency, yes.
It's interesting you bring this up because I was just in a hearing in New Hampshire this week at the State House where Dick Marple, who we've talked about before, is this state representative who's kind of this outside-the-system guy who wants to, you know, get the government out of people's lives. Interesting character. But he was talking about bonding, and the testimony made it sound. I got all this on video, so you're welcome to check it out when you get a chance. I haven't uploaded it yet, but the testimony made it sound like the average person could not put a claim in on a bond.
Well, Mark Stevens basically instructs people how to go file with the bonding agent.
Uh-huh.
The bonding company, basically the town, from what I understand, I don't really know how bonds work, but basically it's their insurance agent for liability. If the town does any damage to you or the state does any damage to you, that you go to their bonding agent there and that indemnifies them for damages, and you file a claim with them. It's actually been really successful. A lot of people have done this with like getting pulled over by the cops and getting their cars impounded.
So you're going to wait until they try to take your stuff before you file that? Is that the idea?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And
now, how will you know when they do that? Are they going to give you a notice, or are they just going to go in and take it and sell it?
Well, so
whenever they feel like
it. My brothers and I go to the farm every day.
Okay,
basically,
so you'll know.
What will happen is, you know, they'll either show up while we're there, mm-hmm. or I'll show up there. And they'll have blocks or something barricading a driveway or whatever. And I'm just going to take one of my pieces of equipment and I'm going to move them. And most likely get arrested for trespassing, which is fine because I want a, you know.
Then you'll have a trial.
Then I'll have a trial for it. Hopefully it'll be criminal trespass, so it's a jury trial. They'll probably reduce it to civil and then probably dismiss it. I would hope to actually maybe even get convicted of it if it's a bench trial, so I could bring it to an appeal, so an appeals court could say, hey, there's no evidence of an actual signed document that gave the town ownership of
not
this.
A legal taking, basically.
You're right, there's not a legal taking.
So right now you've got the objections filed on the claims that this is abandoned property. You filed those in court. That was very recent?
Yep, it was like 3 weeks ago, yep.
Okay, so you've heard nothing back on that. So right now, you know that they're going to probably try to move that stuff or auction it, take it for selling or trashing it.
They'll probably just try to barricade the property and put up town signs that say town property, mm-hmm. which I will remove.
Interesting. All right, so that's where it stands?
That's where that stands. So, and going forward, what I'm going to do is I have been talking with a couple state representatives in New Hampshire. I have kind of made a deal on a piece of land in Grafton, New Hampshire, to mm-hmm. buy. And what I am going to do with that is I'm literally going to be talking to the bureaucrats in Grafton County and in Grafton, New Hampshire. I will be talking to the guy who runs the deeds hall, the registrar of deeds. And I am going to say to him, hey, I don't want the property to be registered within the county. I don't want this corporation calling itself Grafton County having anything to do with it. I don't want it to be in trust. I want to actually, as a man, a living, spirit-filled man, own this property. How do I do that? Please
tell
me. Can
we document all of this correspondence? Well,
and that is what I want to do. I want to go in there and videotape it. I want to document
it. Okay.
Yeah, that's something I want to work on.
Every conversation on the record. I think it would be very interesting and educational.
So I've got a couple of thoughts here. So if you do wind up getting arrested for criminal trespass and you start bringing up, you know, here's these documents that aren't signed, the first thing that I expect the prosecution to say is objection relevance. And the judge to immediately say, sustained.
And I will object, and that'll
an
be
appeal.
An appealable issue. That's what where I'll be looking to go with it.
Yep. You're going to lose at the district court level,
sure,
almost always.
Yeah. And then the appeals court will say, this is not related to you getting arrested.
Yeah, well, it would be, because that's the reason he was there. He didn't believe it was a legitimate order. 855-450-FREE. We can continue this on trespassing coming up. This is Free Talk Live. Moments remain. Enough time for you if you want to get your call and thoughts in right now. We're talking about getting out of the whole property tax scam. You know, sorry, you don't actually own your property, because if you don't pay the property taxes, they'll steal it from you, unless there's some sort of way out. And Jay Noon, you've been spending a lot of time in your life researching the different potential options so far. It hasn't been particularly successful. You've lost your home to the town of Palmer, Massachusetts, and now that same town government is trying to take what was your dad's farm.
That's correct.
And now belongs to you and your brothers, and that is sort of a long saga that we've been hearing from you, and you've been telling that story here on Free Talk Live over the years. The current status is that they have taken the property on paper over your objection, over a federal court hearing that ultimately said you didn't have any standing at that point. They've taken the property on paper. They're now issuing a notice to you saying there's a bunch of junk there that they consider that they don't want, that you know, cars or tractors or whatever it is, farm equipment.
Right.
They're saying, notice, you know, we're going to get rid of this stuff if you don't. I don't even know why they were telling you that it was there.
They basically said is abandoned and the town's going to seize any of the equipment.
Yeah, so they're just giving you notice that,
right.
Hey, this is... And so they may come in at any time to take it, and
yep.
You're going to, stand in the way? Or what was it?
Well, if I'm there, I'm going to be like, you know, I'm not getting shot over this.
Okay.
You know, that's not
good.
Happening.
We don't want to lose you.
You know, I had a couple of horses there. One horse is a stud horse who's got a lot of potential, and he will hurt somebody, and I have and the other horse there is just basically he's an old bastard and he'll hurt somebody too. So
can't arrest a horse.
Well, but they'll just shoot him, right. You know, I mean, you know, or whatever.
Yeah,
they shoot dogs, so why wouldn't they shoot a horse?
They totally would.
So I was concerned about that. I did get my two horses out of there.
I guess technically they could, you know, seize the horse, which would kind of be like arresting the horse.
It'd be hard. But I guess they have people who can do
that. Yeah, like there's no guarantee.
Like
that
the average cop probably wouldn't be able to go in there. And
right, but there's no guarantee that they're going to just kill all of the animals. Sometimes they do take them.
But they're gone anyway. You got them out.
Yeah. And actually, about 4 or 5 years ago, the town was talking about coming in and taking the place. And we had gotten phone calls from 4 or 5 people that were like, hey, the Palmer cops and animal control called us and said they're looking for someone to assist on taking the horses out of there. And what had gotten back to me from one of the guys that works in the town is that everyone they called is like, we're not going to
help.
We're not going to help you take the Noons property. They got even the people who are contracted with the Massachusetts MSPCA basically said, no, we're not going to have anything to do with that, which is pretty awesome.
That's awesome.
Because we're well known in the horse community.
And liked.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So.
All right. So, Daryl, was there a question? Where do we leave off? There was some sort of discussion going on, and I
The question about the appeal and bringing up...
Oh, trespassing. Trespassing.
Right.
We were talking about
bringing up, you know, these documents aren't signed, And I'm convinced, and this is not me saying that this is the right thing, but I've seen enough cases to where, you know, judges are just going to guilty because to where if you do say these documents aren't signed, the judge in the trespass case is going to say, how is that relevant to whether you were on the property or not?
Well, it's totally relevant because that's the reason why he was there, because he did not believe that unsigned documents held any actual legal power. That would be my argument, basically.
And furthermore, this town of Palmer is just a mere corporation that is designated as a charitable entity.
It's a municipal corporation.
All right, so let's role play here. I'm the judge. Mr. Noon, were you on the property?
Well, yeah, it was my property.
Did the police officer tell you to leave?
Sure did.
Did you leave?
No, I'm not leaving my property. He doesn't own it.
Well, they say they own it, and possession is 9/10 of the law. You didn't leave, guilty.
But the evidence, okay, but the evidence is that they have an unsigned document saying that they own it. And
it doesn't matter. They claim that they own it.
Well, then let's get the judge on the record. Let's get the judge on the record.
You're guilty.
Okay, let's get.
Sir, one more outburst, and you're being arrested for contempt.
I object.
One more outburst.
As I'm getting called off to the psych ward,
arrest that man.
I object. Note my objection for the record.
Yeah.
Bailiff, arrest that man.
Don't tase me, bro. Don't tase me.
I've actually been to court and arrest him.
I have been to court for criminal trespass before. I was arrested with the trespass of 12. At the jail here in Keene, New Hampshire, when what happened in that case was they had one of the jail bureaucrats come out. We had a large group of people that was at the jail protesting. And I'm talking 50 people or more. And the large group of people kind of spread out around near the front entrance of the jail. One of the guards comes out, and we called this guard in jail. He was called Mumbles because he was, he wasn't very good at projecting. So this was the guard that they came out and selected to give us notice that we needed to leave. So when you're on somebody's property and they tell you, hey, buddy, you got to go. You're not welcome here anymore. That's notice that you have to leave. You have to be able to understand that person giving you that notice. You have to know that you've been told to leave. You have to understand that you're not allowed to be in that place anymore. And if you do understand that and you stay, you're guilty of criminal trespassing.
You're also speculating on what the statute in Massachusetts actually says of whether or not there is intent.
Okay, well, I am speculating. But a lot of these statutes are similar. Boilerplate. They're similar. Anyway, so this guy comes out and he supposedly told us, I didn't hear it, honestly, did not hear anything. I was nowhere near him when he delivered this notice that you need to leave the property now. And in the trial, this was a portion of the case was they brought this guy up. He testified, and ultimately, I ended up getting convicted of this because they claimed that him just speaking was somehow required notice. And indeed, they may say that an unsigned document is notice in Massachusetts. They may end up saying that, but at the very least, you'll get them on the record for that. And so, yes, the person generally does have to be aware that it is a legitimate request to leave from a legitimate property owner or manager, someone who has the authority to tell someone to leave. And your argument would be, Jay, that an unsigned document has no authority, right?
That and, yes, the unsigned document is basically is like an unsigned check. It means nothing. It's useless. And also, this Jack Collins, who represented the state police about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, in an ACLU sued the state police for information, the Supreme Judicial Court ruled that because they're a municipal corporation that is a charitable entity, they don't have to follow the Constitution. So how is it that this so-called government has an authority to put a tax on the land?
If they're just a corporation.
If they're just a charitable organization is all they are. That's a question that needs to be answered because that's a route that I want to get to. That's a route I'm going to get to here in New Hampshire. And I'm going to start this case before the property. I even buy the property. I'm going to be on these guys. I've been doing some research
gonna
about
you.
It. and I'm going to be right up front with them. I'm going to buy it, and I'm never paying the taxes on it.
Oh, wow.
And I want you guys to know that. How do I own it without taxes is basically the first question I'm going to have for them. How do I own it How can I actually own it?
And they're going to probably say, there's not a way. Here's the form to fill out.
Fine. Whatever.
We'll see what happens.
But I'm going to work on it. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to either sue them, whatever, something.
And so I just pulled up the criminal trespass statute in Massachusetts, and it does not use the word knowingly. It does not use the word intent.
But it
says,
probably
says, whoever without right enters or remains in or upon a dwelling, a house, a building, a boat, or land, or a school, after having been forbidden to do so by the person who has lawful control of said premises.
The argument is that the person does not have lawful control because they don't have a signed document.
But possession is 9/10 of the law, so therefore the guys with guns win.
Well, the guys with guns are almost always going to win. I mean, look, I get your – I understand your critique here. I get it. And Jay is not likely to win. I mean, that's certainly true.
I get that.
He's willing to go for it anyway. He's willing to try it out anyway. And I think it's a sound argument. Look, if these documents are supposed to matter, you know, you're supposed to have a signature on most of these things, right? That's why there's a line for a signature. Isn't it strange? You did the research. You dug up the old cases, not involving you. They don't sign any of these things.
That's right.
How can there be such? It's not like it was a one-time oversight. It's policy, apparently, to not sign these legal land takings, just that no one's ever challenged it.
And there's a couple state representatives in Massachusetts who are aware of this, and I've brought it up to them, and they're not really interested in doing anything about it, but I'm going to drag them into it.
Hey, interesting update. Thanks for sharing it with us here tonight. And like I said, I want to get all of the New Hampshire stuff on document from day one. We'll make you a blogger at Free Keen if you want. You can
do it
all yourself.
I got a 5-year plan I'm implementing here with this. So
it's awesome. Glad to be a part of it. And we'll see you tomorrow night online in the meantime at freetalklive.com. The Free State Project has reached its goal of 20,000 liberty lovers who've pledged to move to New Hampshire and get active to achieve liberty in our lifetime. Perhaps you're trying to figure out what part of New Hampshire should be your destination. If so, consider Keene. You'll find more than 150 reasons to move to Keene at move.freekeene.com. Keene is famous for its historic, publicity-generating activism, as well as being the Liberty Media capital of the world. It's home to freekeene.com, New Hampshire's destination for liberty activism, news, and opinion. For years, we've been compiling over 150 reasons to move to Keene at move.freekeene.com, where you'll learn about some of what's happening here and what makes Keene a great place to live. If you love liberty, you'll probably enjoy anywhere you end up in the Shire. But do your due diligence first. Please visit move.freekeene.com for the full list of over 150 reasons to move to Keene. That's move.freekeene.com.